We are in the middle of Mishle, Perek Chaf Ches, Chaf Ches 28, chapter 28. Good. So chapter 28 actually is the fourth to last chapter, 28, 29, 30, 31. And we have the math, I believe, 97 psukim until Eshes Chayil. So I'm trying to figure out how we can work it out so that we can start Eshes Chayil at a specific, you know, landmark in the calendar. I'm shooting for after Sukkot. Maybe we can do 97 psukim. We do about 5 a week, so we're going to need about 20 weeks. I don't know if that works out or not. It'll be close, probably, with the Legends and Lessons and Yontif and everything. I'll have to look. But either way, we start today with Perek Chaf Ches, chapter 28. Nasu v'en rodef rasha v'tzadek kfir yivtach. Pasuk says that the rasha is nasu v'en rodef. What's the difference between nasu and rodef? Nasu means to run away. Like, what's the song we sing in Hallel? It says Yisrael, Hayam ra vaya nos hayarden yisal yachva, right? Hayam ra vaya nos. That's referring to Kriyas Yamsuf that we just learned last week's parsha. Vaya nos means that it ran away. The waters ran away. That's what it means. Hayam ra vaya nos. They saw what was happening. They ran away. So that's the word vaya nos. Not to be confused with nasu here. Not to be confused with nas. U with an ayin. This is nasu. Nasu nun samach vav, which means to travel or to run away. Nasu means to travel. V'ein rodef rasha. So the rasha runs away but doesn't chase. Runs away but doesn't chase. What's the difference between running away and chasing?
Escape, like a prey.
Right, but let's see more. Good, okay, good. One is acted upon, and one is acting upon, right? The rodef is the one that is acting upon something else, chasing something else, trying to do something. The nasu, the one who is running away, is escaping someone else, right? Is being acted upon, right? So the rasha, and this is how I like to interpret the pasuk, because especially given the second phrase of the pasuk, the rasha looks at life, and I'm going to use dichotomy that I've used before. The rasha, in his fixed mindset, doesn't go out and try to do more things. Right now, here it's talking about threats, and there are some mafarshim talk about it in a more literal sense that, you know, they'll build up a credit and then they'll run away from their creditors, stuff like that. But I want to talk about it more in general, as if it's their sort of life perspective, as I often do. With, you know, the purpose of this class, we sometimes forget, is the modern psychology part of it. So that's, it's really just how I look at the world psychology part of it. But the rasha sees the world almost as the environment that's acting upon him or her, as opposed to I am the actor, right? So getting back to the dichotomy I mentioned before, the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. The fixed mindset individual says, I am who I am. I'm not going to change. If anything happens to life, it's because it's not my fault, because I am who I am. And if something happens that doesn't fit what I want, so it's because it's somebody else's fault. So that's what I think of when I nasu v'ein rodef rasha. The rasha says, these things are chasing me, and I have to run away from them. Right? If I want to be successful, I've got to avoid so-and-so, or it's so-and-so's fault when something happens to me. I'm such a victim, right? I'm being chased. But v'ein rodef, they're not chasing anything else. They don't have the pursuit of more. They don't have the perspective of, let me do something else. Let me grow. Let me pursue and seek out other opportunities. V'ein rodef rasha, the rasha, the evil or the wicked person, is the one that's blaming everyone else, running away from everything else, running away from responsibility, as opposed to the next part of the pasuk. And this is really what sort of informs at least my perspective on the first part of the pasuk. V'tzadikim kikfir yiftach. The tzadik is like a kfir. What is kfir? A kfir, I don't know what the difference is, but the kfir is a type of lion, kind of lion. Maybe it's a small, I thought that, but none of the translations say that. But I did think that also. I thought that kefir might have been like a cub, but they don't say that here, so I question whether it is or not. But I don't know. the Mesura Sion just says Shem Mishemos Ha'aryeh. It's one of the names for a lion. Rashi, I don't think, doesn't say. Yeah. So the tzaddik is like a lion. Yivtach. What is Yivtach? Yivtach means like bitachon. Anyone know the word bitachon in modern Israel today?
It's security.
Security. Bitachon is security, right? You might see their, you know, their uniforms on the back of the uniform says bitachon, security, right? We say at least here. I don't know if people noticed the mishaberach that we did for the chayalim this Shabbos. How did that go?
I mean, he sang pretty well.
Yeah, we had to work on it a little bit.
Yeah,
I think
nice.
The people appreciate the effort, but
the
gotta work it. Yeah, no, so part of the complication is this phrase, because the song is put to the words of the Art Scroll version, not that they're taking it from Art Scroll, but the version that Art Scroll uses. And the one that we've been saying ever since I've been here is from the Koran Siddur, that version. And in that version, it has a couple small nuances. And whenever you have a small nuance, it's hard to fit it in with the words, with the song. So one of the main phrase, at least at the beginning, that changes it, is Hu Yivarech Es Chayalei Tzva Haganah Yisrael. And we add Ve'anshei Kochos Habitachon. Ve'anshei Kochos Habitachon. We daven not only for the soldiers, but all security forces. Meaning not just the people that are out on the front lines wearing the green uniforms, but also the people that are, you know, standing guard in the cities. I mean, I don't know if people are familiar with what happened today in Haifa. Right? That kind of stuff, that requires security. There aren't soldiers everywhere. But security, police forces, so those are stationed in every city. So we daven for them also, that they should be protected and they should be successful.
Right. So you said the Benny Gantz bit. If you see the video.
Benny Gantz. That said what?
It's in the middle of it, in the video of it.
Of the song?
Yeah.
Yeah. So either way, so that's this word. The tzadikim kfir yivtach. Yivtach means to be secure. The tzadik, the righteous person, is secure as a lion. Now, I think the use of the analogy of the lion is purposeful here. Because if we were to take out sort of the descriptors and we were to say the Rasha is Ein Rodef, but the Tzaddik is Yivtach, so the two things don't really match up with each other. The evil, though, the wicked person doesn't chase, and the Tzaddik is secure. What does that mean? The two things don't seem to have anything to do with each other. Security should be the opposite of insecurity, as opposed to the wicked. If you would take Ein Rodef, doesn't chase, so then the corollary to that would be that the tzaddik does chase. Yesh Rodef or Kain Rodef. So then what is this? So therefore, Shlomo Melech teaches us, I believe, the word kafir comes to teach us sort of the analogy or the contrast. The Rasha is Nasu V'Ein Rodef. The Rasha, as Sarita properly said before, the Rasha is the victim or the prey as opposed to the predator. The Rasha is the one who's going to blame everybody else and going to complain when they don't have their food or when things happen in the world and, you know, woe is them. They have to go move somewhere else, right? They're going to run away from their problems. The tzaddik, however, is kfir yivtach. He is secure as a lion. Why is a lion secure? On the one hand, a lion is secure because he's intimidating. Everybody knows that they're going to stand up. They're going to, you know, defend themselves. That's one way. So I guess that's also Ein Rodef for a tzaddik in that way. But the tzaddik kfir yivtach also means that when they need something, the lion's going to go get it. Right? The lion is the one that will pursue the prey. Right? The lion is the predator. The lion is the one that when they see a problem, they're going to go take care of it. They're not going to be afraid of taking care of what they need to take care of. That's the tzaddik kfir yivtach, taking life, as we say, by the horns. Pun intended, I guess, with the animal analogies. Welcome, Steve. But the point is that that's the difference between a Rasha and a Tzaddik. I'm somewhat reading this into the Pasuk, and I recognize that. But the Tzaddik will go proactively to take care of things in life. Right? They will pursue things. But the Rasha is just going to run away from their problems. Another way of understanding this, I think, is the not just how do you respond to a problem, but also why you respond in that way. The tzaddik has conviction. The tzaddik has not just the approach of let me take care of my problems, but I have to take care of my problems because I believe that there is important things to do, right? I believe that I have to support my family. I believe that I have to, you know, be responsible. As opposed to the Rasha, doesn't have beliefs as much as he has reactions. The one who is wicked, what does a wicked or Rasha in sort of, you know, Hashkafic terminology mean? The Rasha is someone who gives into his taivas, into his desires, right? He is reactionary to what his body wants. Oh, my body is craving this thing, let me go get it. That's the Rasha mentality. They're reactionary even to their own desires. The tzaddik is secure, right? And that's another way of reading this pasuk. The tzaddik is secure like a lion. I don't know if people ever watch. I don't watch it very often. But whenever I've seen, you know, sometimes I happen upon a video of a lion in the wilderness. More often than not, they're just sitting down. And then when they need to do something, they'll go do it. They'll pursue it. But they don't feel like they have to go do something all the time. They're secure. They have what they have, and they don't have to pursue their desires all the time. Now, it's hard to use that analogy with an animal, because animals often just pursue their desires. But the point is that they have a certain sort of self-worth. I'm not going to go pursue every little desire that I have. And I think that's another way of understanding this. Okay, moving on to Pasuk Beis in Chav Ches 28:2. Befesha Eretz Rabim Sareha. I'm going to coin this the political Pasuk of the night. Bepesha Eretz Rabim Sareha. What do you have as the translation for that, Sarita?
When there is rebellion in the land, many are its rulers.
When there is rebellion in the land? Okay, good. Befesha Eretz Rabim Sareha. When there is Befesha Eretz, which is an interesting read of the Pasuk, but that's how Rashi says it, I believe. When there is, you know, rebellion or iniquity in the land, so then there are many rulers. There are many people that are jostling for power. If there is, and I think this is sort of the simplest way of understanding it and the most relatable way of understanding it, when there are problems, everyone thinks they can fix them, right? If there's an issue, everyone's got their own solution to the issue, right? Reminds me of COVID, you know, everyone talking, Rabbi, we should do this, Rabbi, should we do that? I get it. A lot of opinions, a lot of options. Nothing is a bad option if somebody's suggesting it and they have their own seichel, they have their own common sense. There's some merit to everyone's options. That doesn't mean we can do all of them, right? We can't fix every problem with every solution or any one problem with all solutions, right? Sometimes you just have to pick and choose what's the best solution. It's very rarely a question of what's a bad thing or a good thing. It's what's the best thing. And people sometimes don't always, you know, appreciate that. Thank you. But the reason why I think we were generally relatively successful, I mean, given the situation, I don't think there's much, you can't call anything a success given the situation. But I think the reason why we found a possible, you know, way of navigating it properly was because we had a team of people together. That doesn't mean we always made the right decision, but it meant that we had a certain camaraderie, but also ability to talk to each other, work things out together. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? I don't like this because of this. We had doctors, we have gabayim, we had different demographics of the shul represented. So we had people that could sort of hash things out like that, as opposed to just me. I know other rabbis, unfortunately, that took it sort of in the unilateral approach, which is I'm going to make the decision without, you know, the
consulting.
Maybe even if they consulted, it was just them taking the consultation and using it to decide what they wanted. And even if they made the right decision, I think it would backfire. Because then it's everybody else versus the rabbi. In our situation, there are people disagreed. We lost a member over it, and it hurts still today that that person left. But the point is, we had a team that was making that decision. So when somebody says, I think we should do this, I can say, we discussed that as a committee. Some people like that, but some people said they didn't like that because of that. And when you have a whole committee that's discussing the whole thing, so then not only does it sort of shift the blame, that it's not one person that you can just point at, it's your fault, but it also makes the people feel like, okay, they discussed it properly. There were other strategies that we used for this also, preemptive discussion, preemptive, you know, announcements. I thought that was very helpful. We never made a policy on the spot. We always said, as of next Sunday, next week, we'll start doing this. And it gave people a little bit of time to sort of come to terms with that kind of thing. On the way out, we kind of did things a little more quickly because it was, you know, safer. But the point is, when there's a problem, everybody thinks they can fix it. And I think you see that in this pasuk. Befasha eretz, as Saritza says, when there's rebellion in the land, meaning there's an opportunity, there is some vulnerability in the power structure, so everybody's going to want it. So there's another aspect of this, which is not just, you know, everyone's got their opinion, but also everybody has their greed. When people see the opportunity, they want it for themselves. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I learned something this week. I lost a very good friend.
I'm sorry.
I'm very upset about it still, but I found something that I didn't know, that even with the Hefer Kedisha, and I told my Yeretna, there are three different Hefer Kedishas, and each one has their own rules about how things are done. And I learned that because I didn't know that where she had, my friend had her Tahara, and was different from what I expected.
Right, what you usually do.
Right. And I asked for the the rationale behind that, and they said, this is our policy, this is the way it is. And I'm really sort of upset about that to begin with.
You said there was no explanation.
What they did. I still don't see why they did that way, but that's their policy, and
who knows?
Updated it, and it's medical, so it's medically related. So where we are, they decide one thing, and someone else decides something else, and then they're taking into account the people who are doing the service too.
Right.
So it's bothered me a couple of days, but now I've accepted it.
Yeah, it's hard. I think.
So I didn't mean to argue with anyone, but I was trying to understand why it was the way it was.
Yeah, you're just, you know, concerned and you want to do the right thing.
And my friend didn't get what I thought she should have received.
Right, exactly. You wanted to do good by her, but. I think I also think some of these times, and this happens here all the time also, some policies just make their way into the rule book. Nobody knows how they got there. That's not to say we should do away with them, but you have to understand them, reevaluate them, try to figure out why they are the way that they are.
They haven't updated it. This is, this is the way it's been done for 17 years. I'm not changing anything.
Yeah, you have to reconsider new evidence if it's possible. But yeah, that stuff is hard. So whenever there is an issue, people always try to, grab hold for the sake of power. Now, this is a little different in terms of what we were saying before. Beyond just there's an issue, everybody wants to give their own 2 cents. This is specifically Rabim Sareha. Specifically, there are many people that want to be the officer, that want to be the person in charge. This is not just about giving your 2 cents. It's also about having power. And as we know, having power is itself a questionable, the Mishnah in Avos says, Sunas Rabbanus, you should not want that kind of leadership. Whatever Rabbanus means, that context, we're not getting to that.
Too many cooks spoil the broth.
That could be too. We've talked about that. We talked about that a long time ago. We talked about that. Better to have one leader than to have multiples, because then, things aren't going to get done. Or when they get done, it'll be done through backstabbing or leveraging and stuff like that. And you see that a lot in, not saying that this is a, trying to say this nicely, but you see that a lot with coalition governments. And I think Israel suffers because of it, because it's all about jostling, and jockeying for, getting what I want at the expense of what you want. Let's make a deal. And that's, you don't come to a consensus that way. You're just making deals. That's not consensus. You're just giving in. Yeah. So either way. So that's Sarim Rabin.
At the expense of the people.
Yeah, presumably at the expense of the people, but it depends what the issue is. But yeah. Eretz Rabim Sareha, again, people always want power, which is just crazy. We have, and this is despite the fact that America is sort of democratically election. So that is better than monarchy, but at the same time, it's still man-made, right? And anything man-made is going to be abused with whatever politics there are. So I was at the State of State last week, as I mentioned, and I sat down next to a guy named Larry from Kalamazoo. And Larry was a nice guy. We schmoozed about the Air Zoo. We schmoozed about the art museum there, It has a lot of Jewish stuff in it. I don't know if it's a Jewish museum. I don't remember. But either way, there's some Jewish history in Kalamazoo. Not much anymore, but, you know, still some landmarks there. But so I spoke to him about that, and then I asked him, like, what he's doing here. Like, who is his friend? He wasn't a senator or anything like that. He was a guest, and he said he was, I don't know, the CEO or the president of some kind of beer industry. So I just thought to myself, I don't know who this guy is, but I'm sure he's here so that he can, you know, get something or make some hay through his leveraging of a relationship, right? He knows this senator that's trying to push some kind of bill or is going to help up the industry. And it could all be, you know, on the up and up. I'm not saying that there's anything different than that. But the point is, when a system is man-made, it can be leveraged by other men, right? Whether it's for a lobbying group, or it's for some kind of financial entity, or it's for some kind of industry, whatever it is. I'm not saying this guy was doing that. I'm just saying it made me think about the purpose of politics or the functioning of politics and how the structure itself lends to that kind of abuse. So here, I think you see that also. Befesha Eretz Rabim Sareha, the Malbim says that the Ralbag says that these two phrases are actually separate from each other. Meaning, the way that Sarita says it, and the way that Rashi says it, and the Ralbag says it, is that Pesha Eretz Rabim Sareha. That the Rabim Sareha comes in response to the Pesha Eretz. That in response to the rebellion in the land, the overthrowing of the government, or the iniquity of the government, or whatever it is. So then everyone's got their opinion, or everyone wants that power, everyone wants that position. That's the response, the Rabim Sareha. There are many people that want that position. However, says the Ralbag beautifully, I would say this is a bit of a novel approach, but he says, Hine ba'avor pesha aretz, v'heyos ha'am ashrebo mechuyavim kliya, because the land is, you know, rebellious, and because the people are committing iniquities, so therefore they are deserving of punishment. He says destruction, but let's just lose the punishment. And therefore, Rabim Sareha. Then Hashem says, you want punishment? I'll give you punishment. Here's, you know, a monarchy. And here are people that want to overthrow that monarchy. And here are other people that want that, you know, that those people to be brought down. You want, you know, you acted like this, you're going to be punished by a man-made government with people that are jostling for power all the time. You're going to have this tax levied on you, and then somebody else is going to take over and levy these taxes. They're going to make new rules. They're going to make new rules, you know, new laws that are going to make your life miserable. And it's always going to be an ever-ending, you know, what's it called? The door? Revolving door. Never-ending revolving door with all these different monarchies jostling for power. So that's the punishment to people who are bad. It's fascinating read of the pasuk. V'zeyeh kli hashchisam. This is going to be the tool to destroy them. Bekalos easily. Uchmosh riba yasarim kli hashchisam. Bekalos kach yarech kimavos. He gets into the next part of the pasuk, which we haven't even said yet. But that, says the Ralbag, is how to read the pasuk. Something bad in the land, they will be punished by getting a lot of politicians. You know, it's a funny thing to say, but like, what's the alternative? What is the alternative exactly? Again, you know, I think we're blessed to have, you know, democratic elections, and but even that has tons of flaws, as you can, you know, you don't have to look very far to see that. But the point is that without some kind of moral leadership, so then you are at the mercy of these greedy politicians or greedy monarchs that want to just take power for themselves. And that is, as Sarita said before, that is a punishment, or it is a bad thing for the people. It is bad for the people to have such a structure. And depending on what side of the, you know, depending how vociferous of a political reader you are, and how which side of the aisle you fall on, you might think about that. You might think that about the situation right now, you know. Or you might have thought that during Trump's administration or Obama's, right? Everyone's got their thing. Oh, this is so terrible for the people. We're not going to get into that right now. But the point is that you can see where that concept is relevant. But then the end of the pasuk says, "Uva Adam mevin yodea ken yarich." And to the extent that you can have one person, one leader, who does understand and who is knowledgeable, ken yarich, to the extent that they are knowledgeable, to the extent they do understand, ken yarich, so will his rule continue. People think it's just about getting power, and once you have power, it's just all about keeping power. Says Shlomo HaMelech, it's not about power. It's about someone who knows what's best for the people. And if you know what's best for the people, you will have a long longevity in the office, right? Kein ya'arich, you will endure in the office. That's how the Malbim explains it. Okay, moving on to Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk Gimel says, Gever rush v'oshek dalim matar sochev v'in lachem. Here we have another analogy, right? We had the analogy in the first Pasuk about the lion. The second Pasuk was really just straightforward, no analogies. Here you have another analogy. Gever rush, a poor person, how do you say it, Sarita?
Who withholds what is due to the wretched.
What's the first, a person who is?
A poor man.
A poor man, okay. The article says pauper. A poor man who, you said, withholds, I would say, abuses, oshek, how do they say it here? Who robs the destitute. So it's interesting. Rash and dal. Rash and dal. So we have ozer dalim. Where do we have that phrase? Ozer dalim. I think it might be in Slichos or Yom Narayim. Do we have, hold on.
Help to the wretched.
Oh, wretched is an interesting word. I wouldn't translate it. Dal is someone who's poor or, you know, destitute or something. Is it in Shmoneh Esrei? Ozer dalim? I don't remember. No, it's not there. It's in davening.
Can you just look up a phrase like that and see somewhere in a safari or somewhere? I could find it in a second.
Yeah, you're right, exactly. I was just trying to test myself. But pretty sure it's in Yom Narayim Slichos, maybe. But so what does this mean? What is the difference between a rash and a dal? Because the last part of the pasuk means that sochef matar sochef ve'en lachem. It's comparable, this, you know, pauper who steals from the destitute or torments the destitute. It's like a rain, matar. It's like rain which washes away the food, right? V'ein lachem. There's so much rain that it's not going to have any food. There it is. Hold on. About to figure it out.
It's like a hierarchy. You mean, one poor man, he's withholding what's from someone who's worse than him.
Okay. Right. Well, what does that have to do with no bread?
And he's withholding. And he said, withholding what? He doesn't say anything about bread. I mean,
it's in
food?
Shema.
It means food?
It's in the brachos of Shema.
It leaves no food.
It's in the brachos of Shema. Is this Ashkenazi? I think it is. But they're not right next to each other, so it's a hard. But it is in it's in Hoshanas and Slichos. Oh. Right? Ozer Dalim Oshiana. I don't know if you know the Hoshanas that we say. It's also in Slichos. Anenu Ozer Dalim Anenu. Yeah. All right, similar. I knew it was the Yantif type of stuff. But anyway. So the pasuk here, so you're saying that you're just taking it away from, there's not going to be bread because you took the bread away. I think that could be, but it's a little
simplistic. It doesn't say you say bread, it just says withholds anything.
Well, it says lechem in the pasuk.
Oh,
it represents food, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, the next sentence.
I think the most conventional understanding of this pasuk from the first one that I saw was that gever rash v'oshek dalim, if you are already a poor person and you're, in order to get by, you're stealing from somebody else, so then ultimately you won't get that food either, not necessarily that food, but later on, it won't help you out in the end of the day. You think you're making your life better by stealing. It's, in the end of the day, in the long term, you're going to run out of food. That food is not going to last. Now, I don't know exactly why it won't last. But one specific explanation that I liked was, in the Art Scroll, it has a footnote quoting the Meiri. I don't know where the Meiri's commentary on Mishlei is. I probably have to look it up online. But Gever Rash and Dal both mean some kind of destitution. But Rash means not someone who is literally poor, but someone who is poor in their perspective, meaning they see themselves as poor, right? Harkening back to the Mishnah at the beginning of the fourth parak of Avos, Ezehu Ashir Hasamech Bechelko, who is wealthy, the person who is content with their lot. Someone who is not content with their lot is not wealthy. They are Rash. They see themselves as a poor person. I think about this very often. When I see people who claim that their bare necessities of life include iPhones and include computers and include television sets and include nice suits. This is the bare necessities of life. My mother, growing up, she was the director of admissions of a Jewish day school. And she said one of the saddest things that she saw was families who would apply for all types of scholarships so that they didn't have to pay tuition. And then come December time, they're wondering where their kids are from the school, and it turns out they went on vacation to Israel, or they went to, you know, Aruba or whatever, some exotic vacation. And from her perspective, like, we gave you thousands of dollars off of tuition so that you could spend it in Aruba? Like, that's why the school is going bankrupt, so that you can go on vacation? Like, that's not fair to the school. And the people's response would be, and I'm not saying this is literally what they said, but this is what they would say, oh, I need to vacation. I need to go to a Pesach program. I can't make Pesach at home. I can't clean my kitchen myself. I can't, you know, buy matzah and wash lettuce. I can't do that, right? But we convince ourselves of what we need. And the truth is, we can push ourselves a lot more. There's a wonderful book called Stretch by, I want to say his name is Sun and Shine, something like that. Scott Sun and Shine. So he talks about this sort of epidemic of luxury that we don't feel today because of all the resources that are available. We have grown accustomed to not stretching the resources that we already have, right? Whether it's time, or whether it's physical things that we have in the garage that you can make a handle out of the stuff in your garage. No, I got to get brand new ones from Home Depot and then add the old ones back to my garage so I can just keep them there forever and not use them. Or throw out the perfectly good ones. That's a pet peeve of mine. If throwing out good stuff is a real pet peeve of mine. Sometimes Ricky gets frustrated by it. But, you know, just today I brought home a bunch of groceries and I didn't notice. I looked through a few of the bags to pick the right bag from Costco today, the new business center at Costco. I don't know if everyone has been there. It's very exciting. But the bag had one bad apple, and there was like a spot on it. I didn't realize until I brought it home. It had a spot on it. So I figured, okay, I'll cut off that half of the apple, and we could eat the other part. And Ricky just wanted to throw it out. She said that it actually affected the other part of the apple. Okay, fine, I trust her. But that's my first instinct is not, oh, there's a spot on the apple, let's throw it out. Oh, there's a spot on the apple, cut that part off of the apple and eat the rest of it. That's my approach.
I like that too. And it's funny, in the conversation I just had with June yesterday, we went to a place together, but she was talking about also the yeshiva and many people taking time off.
It's hard. And I do recognize the need for vacation, but it has to be at... You know, it has to be balanced. It can't just be, you know, I'm going to spend thousands of dollars and then take money away from the rest of the Jewish community so that I can, you know, go on vacation, luxurious vacation.
Yeah. And I'll fix things rather than throw them out, too.
Yeah, I try. I know Mayor's like that.
He doesn't like to waste. Well, yeah. He learned it, actually.
He's a very resourceful person.
Or wood.
Yeah.
And at the, you know, place they bought it from, he said, you don't need to buy all that.
Yeah, right.
And then he figured out,
Right, you can do stuff. Industrial, yeah. So that's what the book Stretch is all about, stretching the resources that we have, not feeling we needed more. But that's what this pasuk is talking. Gever rush v'oshek dalim. Someone who's a rush, who thinks they need more, who thinks they're a pauper. They're not a pauper, according to the Meiri. This is a person of means, a person that has things, and yet they feel like they need more. They feel like they're lacking. And therefore, they're oshek dalim. Therefore, it comes at the expense of other people who really do need. A real poor person who does need those resources, but because you need your iPhone, right? That kind of thing. I thought about this a little bit with the... remember during COVID, they had these boxes. I don't know if you know because you don't have young kids. They had these boxes. They were giving out like boxes of kosher food. You know what I'm talking about? They do this like every Thursday or something. I don't know. I'm not familiar with it anymore. But anyways, we used to go, but it was because it wasn't just for, you know, poor people. Originally, we asked that question. Is this for people that like really need it or people like whoever wants it? And they said, no, it's for everyone who wants. And it was a government subsidy. The money was already allocated and whatever. They used it for, you know, alleviating our groceries since all the kids were in the house, whatever. But I think about that, you know, relative to this pasuk. Gever rush, we have to be careful that if we consider ourselves a poor person in one way or another, I'm not saying that we're considering ourselves a poor person overall, but maybe we're poor in the area of food, or maybe we think we're poor in the area of, you know, our utility bill, or poor in the area of clothing. And therefore, we will benefit from some kind of communal resource. Realize that you're taking away from other people that might be able to use that resource. I heard a shiur recently from, not recently, this is probably at least 6 months ago, a person who was talking about those who collect money for tzedakah. If you're a tzedakah organization and a person is willing to give you money and they're giving you more than you need, you have to reject that money, right? If you have, let's say, a GoFundMe page, right, you see these things, or cause match, whatever, and the money has already been allocated, right? You had a, you know, a $60,000 goal. You hit that mark. You are, I think, halachically obligated to stop that campaign. Don't allow people to give more. If that's what you think you need, so then taking more will be taking money from other charities. People who will continue giving could give more to somebody else. The next day, someone will ask them for money, and they'll say, oh, I just gave to somebody else. I can give you a little bit. So the person the day before they're stealing from the next person, right? That's gever rush v'oshek dalim. Someone who still considers himself a pauper, but is therefore stealing from the destitute. There are other applications of that. I'm not getting into them. But matar soch v'en lachem, you should know that if you take that perspective, if you take the perspective of, I need more at the expense of other people, so you should know that the more that you get is not going to last. That's sort of Hashem is going to get, you know, get retribution for that individual. Okay, Pasuk Dalet, 28:4. Ozve Sora Yehalalu Rasha. We talked about this last week. What was the word last week? Yehalalu Pi Mahalalo. What was the pasuk? Ish Lefi Mahalalo. Well-known Rabbeinu Yonah, but here, Ozvei Torah Yehalalu Rasha, those who forsake the Torah, those who neglect the Torah, they're going to be the ones that praise the wicked. Right? As we said last week from Ish Vafila Halalo, that according to Rabbeinu Yonah, a person is defined based on, or the person is exposed or revealed based on who they praise. Who are the people that you're talking about around the dinner table? Are you talking about so-and-so who did a good deed? Or are you talking about some random celebrity who's gone through four wives and, you know, sings, you know, about terrible themes of life, right? So who do you praise around the Shabbos table, around the dinner table? So the Ozvei Torah, those who forsake the Torah, they will praise the Rasha. That doesn't mean you can't talk about those things, whatever. If you have some kind of connection to somebody over, you know, sports or whatever, you can talk about sports, but don't praise them. Maybe you can talk about how, you know, they're good at football, you know? You can talk about how Brock Purdy really used his legs well to win the game yesterday, much to the chagrin of many Detroit Lions fans, right? You could say that, but don't go talking about, he might be a good guy. I don't know him at all. But don't go talking about, oh, and he's such an upstanding person and we love his values. Like, you don't know his values. You don't know what he stands for. You know that he carries a football. And trust me, I love football. I love watching football, right? So I'm not bashing football. But you have to be careful about how you talk about these people, right? I'm a big Kansas City Chiefs fan. I'm sorry. It was gonna be Chiefs-Lions for a while there. It was going to be very difficult for me for the next 2 weeks. But it didn't happen. I'm sorry. I wish it would have happened. I wish I would have had the discomfort of figuring out what to do there. But I like football like this. But I would not say that Patrick Mahomes, my favorite football player, is my model citizen of what to be. You know, I think he's a nice guy relative to other football players, but he probably believes in Avodah Zarah. And he probably doesn't have the same values that I want my kids to have. So I have to be very careful how to talk about him, especially in front of my kids, right? He's a good football player, but he's not a good person. People ask, what would you do if you ever met, you know, one of your sports, you know, people that you like in sports? Like, not much. Like, you're a great football player. Love watching you play football. And I'm not going to, like, go ask for an autograph or, like, not going to feel the need to take a picture. Maybe I take a picture of them, but I don't feel the need to have, like, a picture together or some autograph. Like, I really don't have a desire for that. I enjoy watching them play the sport. Like, it's fun to watch them, you know, experts at their craft. I just enjoy that. I grew up in that kind of home. Maybe if I didn't, I wouldn't. But it reminds me of a story sometimes of there was a kid in the hospital in England, I think it was. And you know how they have, like, these make-a-wish things and, you know, sports players try to do their community service type of thing. So David Beckham is a famous soccer player, or what they call football, British football player. And he goes into this kid's Jewish from kid's room, and as a way to, like, pick up his spirits, you know, thinking that, like, the kid's gonna recognize him and just love him and be so excited. And he walks in, the kid has no response, absolutely no response, and happens to be the kid didn't know who he was. So that's the real joke of the story. But David Beckham says, "Here, I'm David Beckham. I'm here to cheer you up." And he says, "Oh, wonderful! What do you do?" And Beckham says, "Oh, I play soccer." And the kid goes, "Oh, I also play soccer."
Right.
It's like, so what? You play soccer? Great. Okay, why does that mean that you're going to cheer me up? Like, can we talk about soccer? Like, what? Right? So when you put it in that, like, framework, it's like, yeah, they play sports. It's great. They're great at what they do. You can analyze what they do. I analyze it. I watch it. I'm entertained by it. But put it into context. They're playing sport. That's not what life is all about. And I get, you know, into the games too. I'm not saying I don't, but it's always in context of, like, these are just sports players. So you have to be very careful about Ozve Sora Yahalalu Rasha, that those who forsake the Torah, don't keep the Torah in proper context in their life, so they'll end up praising those who are wicked. You know, I don't think Patrick Mahomes is a bad guy. I don't think a lot of sports players are bad guys, but there are definitely some bad guys playing sports. You know, there are definitely bad guys that people will praise that should not be praised. They should not be looked at, even for entertainment value. I personally don't feel comfortable, you know, rooting for some of these guys. But either way, not getting into that. But the point is that Ozve Torah, you have to, Vishomrei Torah, those who are Shomrei Torah, those who guard and protect the values of Torah for themselves. So then Yisgarubam, they are going to contend with them. They're going to criticize them. They're going to, it's unclear whether or not it literally means that you have to proactively criticize, or if the moment comes up, you have to be careful and say, actually, I don't subscribe to that person's values. So that's this pasuk, that keeping Torah in mind when we are in other contexts, I think is a worthwhile, it's not necessarily what Shlomo Melech is talking about, because Shlomo Melech, you know, didn't have the National Football League or the Major League Baseball or whatever. But I'm sure he had other versions of that. You know, such and such a ruler who's a Russia. Don't talk nicely about him in sort of his life decisions. You can talk about, you know, being grateful to the things that he gave you, but that's a different story. So I think Shlomo Melech is saying it in his own way, but we can certainly apply it in our way. An Sheira, in the last pasuk tonight, pasuk Hay, An Sheira lo yavinu mishpat. Men of evil will not understand judgment. It's unclear what this means. Rashi says, let me see here. Mishpat meaning their ultimate judgment. They don't care for the consequences in the future because they're living for the now. Those who are evil, they won't understand. They don't understand now what's going to come later, and that's what that's what Rashi says it means. Says David a little bit different than Rashi. It's not that they're not thinking about the future, but rather when that comes, when the consequence comes, they say, "Whoa, what did I do wrong? You know, why am I getting punished?" You know, but they don't realize it's because they did that. You know, the thing that deserves punishment. But they'll because of their wicked ways, they don't. Sometimes they see it and they're just acting foolish, but. Other times, they don't even know in their own minds. They think what they're doing is good, right? We all play mind tricks to ourselves. It's easy to say this person's a wicked person and he does something so terrible and some, you know, crazy logic justifies it. But we all do that in one way or another. We all justify our misdeeds and think that we didn't do anything wrong until the day comes, you know, you step on the scale and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't lose any weight this week. How did that happen? Oh, it must be that piece of cake that I had. It must be the soda that I drank. Right, but at the time, oh, I haven't eaten so much today. Right, we all have our neuroses that we tell ourselves. Right, always an easy example, power of example that we can all relate to is weight loss. But obviously, it applies in more extreme examples too. However, umevakshe Hashem, those who seek out Hashem, yavinu chol. Yavinu chol is an interesting pasuk. Again, it means in the future, according to Rashi, what that means is they understand that there are rewards and punishments. They understand that there are consequences and achievements based on how we decide to act. Alternatively, from the Mitzvot David's perspective, Kol Davar Haba Min Hashamayim Yavinu. They will see whatever happens to them right now, whether it's a good thing or it's a bad thing. They'll understand this must be because of something I did before, right? Yavinu Kol. Whatever comes to them, they will. You know, subscribe or ascribe that consequence. Oh, it's because I did this, or because I did that. I spoke about this last week at my Shabbos table a little bit. We talk about the mun. I said this over in a drush a couple of years ago. We talk about the mun and how the mun came in different forms and at different places. Right? Sometimes it came unprocessed, and sometimes it came as a loaf of bread. Right? This is based on Psukim, the Gemara tells us. But so what's the difference? Sometimes it came right at your doorstep, and sometimes it came, you know, a few hundred yards away from your doorstep. So what's the difference? In both cases, the Gemara tells us it was based on your own righteousness. And I find it to be such a fascinating, fascinating claim. We know the man came every single day. And I don't know if you remember this drasha that I talked about. Can you imagine the person's thought process while they walk 200 yards to go get their man? What's that person going to think about? Imagine you got up that morning, and you said, wow, yesterday I had such a great day. I got up in the morning and I davened well. I said my brachos on my breakfast. I went to work. I was nice to my colleagues. I ate my lunch. I said brachos before and after. I listened to halacha shir in the middle. I went back to work. I had a good day at work. I accomplished a lot. I didn't waste a lot of time. I came home. I did homework with my kids. And I ate my dinner. And I went and I learned a little bit more. I davened min chamarev. I'm definitely, the mun is definitely going to be at my doorstep. You open the door, lo and behold, it's not at the doorstep. Lo and behold, it's not 20 feet away. It's not 50 feet away. It's 200 yards away. What, 200 yards away? So then you start walking. And you can't help but think to yourself, what did I do wrong? And then you remember, actually yesterday, when I benched after my lunch, I was distracted. I didn't pay proper attention. Right, and when I was doing homework with my kids, I didn't have patience with them, and you know, I sort of pushed them to make mistakes. So then you start thinking about all the things you did wrong, and that's what this pasuk mevakshe Hashem yavinu kol. When you are seeking out Hashem, you want to do the right thing. You want to be in sort of the good graces with Hashem. Yavinu kol, you'll understand. You'll be able to retroactively think back. What did I do? Even if you're right or wrong, that's not our shikul. Whether we are absolutely, this is absolutely why this happened, right? That, you know, people, you know, other rabbis can make those claims and get themselves in trouble. This calamity happened because so and so did this, or because these, you know, non-religious Jews do that. You hear this a lot. Right? That is not our job. Our job is personally, on an individual level, to think about, this happened. It must be a message, or it must be something that I have to take a message for something. What can I do better about? What can I think about that I did yesterday or last week that it could be better? And I think that's what it's saying here. You know, Mevakshe Hashem Yavinu Kol, someone who's truly seeking out growth and trying to be better in Torah and mitzvos, so then they will see all that comes to them as an outgrowth of their own activities, for the good and for the bad. And hopefully grow because of that. That's different than the Anshera. Anshera lo yavinu mishpat. The Anshera, when something happens, and this is within the Mesudas Dov's explanation, not Rashi, but the Anshera, the evil people who act with evil, so then something happens to them, lo yavinu mishpat. Oh, why did this happen to me? Right, coming back to the first pasuk, right? They'll play the fixed mindset. This is not my fault. It's somebody else's fault. I can't believe somebody would do this to me. How could Hashem punish me in this way? Right? Theodicy, if you will, right? So that's the Anshei Ra perspective. The Mevakshei Hashem perspective is, I must be able to do something better. There must be something that I can improve upon that led to this, you know, difficulty. Sometimes that's easier to ask that question. Sometimes it's very hard to ask that question. How could this ever happen? That kind of thing. Not getting into specifics, but you can probably apply it yourself. But that is the Mevakshei Hashem perspective that sometimes very hard to apply. But the Mesudas Dov is saying things happen in life, and it's our job to figure out what can we improve upon so that we can get that message and sort of learn from it, whatever that message should be. Okay, Shkaya. I wish you have a good night,
Rabbi.
Yeah, I've wondered that also. I assume it was like just in perfect perpendicular placement to their doorstep. I'm not sure, but yeah, I hear you.
Thank you.
Yeah, be well. What's up, Joseph?
I was thinking, you know, when you were talking about seeing